Hey everyone, it's Jeremy and Stephanie from RVFTA.com coming at you with another mini episode of our podcast. And today we're going to be talking about trends in the RV and camping industries for 2019. And Stephanie showed me her list earlier today and I got really excited and it inspired me to come up with a really cool list too. And I think we've got our finger on the pulse of some of the changes you are going to see in both of these spaces in the years ahead.
Well, time will certainly tell.
Time will certainly tell. Stephanie's not exactly taking me seriously right now because I snuck a juice box down to the podcast studio
to
record.
You're sipping on an Honest Kids juice box while we record. Yeah, it's hard to
That's not a sponsored message. It's Appley Ever After. And I counted, we rarely have juice boxes, and I counted them to make sure I was leaving one each for the boys as well. Yeah. Like this was like a bonus juice box. Look, we've got.
Pulled it out of your hoodie pocket.
I pulled it out of my hoodie pocket. I mean, part of being a parent, a dad at my age, a parent in general, I think is that you just have no dignity anymore. And I'm embracing that completely.
Juice boxes.
But look, we've got eight really great trends, four for the camping industry, four for the RV industry, and I would love to hear from you, our listener, to see if you think we're right, see if we're wrong, see what trends you have got your finger on. But before we dive in, we do have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts.
Yeah, you know what? Yogi Bear's Jellystone Parks, they have their finger on the trends in the camping industry for sure.
As in like Yogi does? Yogi's got his finger on the trends?
Yes, Yogi knows exactly what's up, and he's making sure those campgrounds really step up, because right now, it is all about family fun at Yogi Bear Parks. It's about places where families can go and they can set up their RV, they can pitch their tent, rent a cabin, and they can literally chill out, do nothing, and have a blast for their entire stay.
Yeah, Yogi and the folks there at Corporate Yogi that Yogi manages, they really do understand that hardworking families, like mom is working, dad is working. Mm-hmm. They want their RV vacations to be relaxing for them and really exciting for the kids. And they are absolutely doing that at Jellystone Parks.
You know, speaking of trends in the camping world, I'll never forget one of the very first experiences we had at a Yogi Bear Park was when our boys learned to play a game they had never seen anywhere else.
Gah, fall.
And there was a, you know, camp counselor there.
His name was Nitro.
Nitro. They all had nicknames there, which is just shows you what it's like to be at a Jellystone. They all had nicknames, and Nitro taught our kids how to play Gaga ball. They were probably like 5 years old, 6 years old at the time. It is still a passionate hobby for them. The first thing they look for when we get to a campground now is whether or not it has a Gaga ball pit. It's like part of their camping legend.
And what they do at Yogi is they organize the activities and they have like the camp counselors mm-hmm. or the camp staff running them. Because if it's just a basketball court there, it's not as fun as a basketball court where there's a tournament going on being run by the staff or whatever it might be. And Yogi's great.
And it's always like high school, college kids fun. They've got tons of energy, and our boys just absolutely, that's one of their very favorite parts about camping at a Jellystone.
There's almost 100 of these Jellystone parks across the country. So where should our listeners go to find out more?
All right, you're going to go to jellystonepark.com to make a reservation at a Jellystone park near you. And you're going to do that soon if you want to camp at a Jellystone park in the coming up season, because they're going like hotcakes.
In the coming up season.
I
miss Yogi. Yogi's been on point and on trend
he's hibernating, and he'll come out when we wake up the bears in the spring, and we'll let you know.
That's true. All right, Stephanie, are you ready to start? And the way you broke this down, I think we're going to start with four trends in the RV industry, then four trends in the camping industry. We're going to go back and forth because some of mine were inspired by some of yours.
Yeah, that happens. All right, so my number one for trends in the RV industry is that I really believe that you're going to see a sort of move or movement back to basics with RVs. And what I mean by back to basics is I mean smaller and simpler. So over the past few years, what's happened is RVs have gotten larger and fancier. So even within certain areas of the travel trailer, you just keep seeing larger and larger travel trailers, and you keep seeing more and more elements in there. Now, you would think that's awesome, right? It's awesome that everything's Bluetooth and touchscreen and this and that. But what we've seen is that this has created we think, a bit of an issue in terms of maintenance and in terms of user experience, because ultimately a camper is a home on wheels. It is crazy what these things go through, driving down the road, getting backed into campsites, getting set up, families in them, banging around. And we put all this wear and tear and we get really frustrated when things don't work. And we kind of think that that's like, put a little pressure on the user experience for sure. And I'm kind of thinking that some folks are saying, hey, you know what I want? I want a really simple travel trailer, or I want a really simple motorhome that's going to take me from point A to point B, and it's going to work really well and be built really well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people that we talk to, just hundreds and hundreds of RV owners over the course of a year, you know, a lot of people that buy really fancy large RVs, I do feel like some of them really struggle with things breaking that are sort of like the extraneous things, like more like the gadgets or the auto leveling jacks or the LED running lights or the things that are not exactly necessary to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I'm not judging anyone on that or anyone that's bought that type of RV. I've been there.
Well, we're not talking about what's good or bad. We're talking about trends. So,
yeah, you know. I've been there with even like our first pop-up camper, you know, just like we got one with all the extra features and those things ended up driving me crazy because a lot of times they didn't work. So I think to your point, a lot of people will want a simpler RV experience, and I agree with you completely.
Yeah, so we have seen some things come out in the past year, more and more smaller, under 30 feet is what we call small, but I actually think that there's a lot of room still under 30 feet. I talked to people at an RV show this past weekend that I was at, you know, a couple that was looking for that smaller fifth wheel that they could still get into. And I could point them to a couple of things in the 2019 lineup.
I think what's happened in the last 10 years is that RVs have gotten much, much bigger and they've gotten much, much smaller. And frankly, I think the middle ground is what has been ignored in terms of like really high quality options at 25 feet
or something
like that, where there's just tons of cool stuff that's 15 feet and tons of cool stuff that's 40 feet. But then everything in the middle is just sort of bland vanilla travel trailers.
Yeah.
And I would like to see that middle ground get really, really exciting again for RV owners.
All right. What's your first trend in the RV industry that you want to talk about?
I don't know that this is going to materialize this year, but I really feel like in the next 5 years, you are going to see better communication between the truck companies and the RV companies. And I think they're going to work together to help create tools that help the consumer match trucks to trailers. Because right now, frankly, it's rocket science for most people. I mean, we've been working in the RV industry for 4 or 5 years. And like when we bought the toy, like I still got to sit down and just crunch all these numbers. And I'm doubting myself and I'm uncertain and I'm emailing friends. And like on our forum, you see people just tormenting themselves, trying to figure out if a truck and a trailer are appropriately matched.
And
I think it should come to a point where you put in a VIN number for a truck and a VIN number for an RV on some kind of database, and they're going to give you some information on whether it's a safe match. I mean, I think both of the industries collectively owe that to the consumer to some degree, and I think that both of the industries collectively have avoided that over the years because they're afraid of litigation.
They don't want liability.
They don't
Absolutely.
Want liability, but I think it's going to push past that point because too many people are making bad decisions, and those bad decisions, like they're not trying to figure it out.
So I met Mike and Tia Barrett at the last RV show that I was at, and they told me a little bit of their story, and it just resonated so strongly with me because they did in fact have an F-150, and they bought a trailer that, for all intents and purposes, the numbers were right. They really worked hard to find a trailer where the numbers were okay. He said the second he was driving and he was white knuckling it, he felt so uncomfortable. And I said, dude, like, I feel ya. Like, our numbers were fine on the toy hauler.
I asked a leading expert in the RV industry if our F-150 matched the toy hauler that we bought. And he, you know, and I'm not putting on him. It's ultimately the responsibility of the person buying things but, you know, purchasing those things, but everything was fine on paper as
Nobody
well.
Said, hey, you're not making a good decision
but
here.
Then when we matched the two of them up and drove off the lot, I instantly knew I needed to buy an F-250.
And that's not right. That shouldn't happen. Like when you do your due diligence and you try to find the right numbers, you should be able to get the education that you need. And that's on both sides. That's on both the truck side and the RV side. Both need to be better. Like the RV companies need to be better at saying, hey, this number payload, it really matters. Pay attention to payload,
or
you know?
Like you really need to stay under these numbers because you're going to put in more weight than you think. You know, it's like the truck companies have been boasting about the tow capacities of the truck forever. And then the, you know, the RV industry, on the other hand, wants everything to sound like it's half ton towable. And
right.
I feel like
there's responsibility.
We
on
need
both
to
sides, yeah.
bust past that. And it needs to be easier for the consumer to match trucks to trailers. I'm not saying that's going to materialize this
well,
year.
Well, Mark Polk seemed to be.
I know that
he seemed
Mark
to be.
Gave me,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mark gave me help on that. He gave
hope.
Me
yeah.
hope
mm-hmm.
on that issue that they are working through some of this stuff.
Yeah. So, all right. So my next trend in the RV industry, I actually truly believe that in the very near future, we are going to see a switch, a sort of a tide change in the industry, and we're going to see more of a focus on quality from the manufacturers. Now, a lot of you might have just spit out your coffee, like, yeah, that's never going to happen. But, you know, I thought I figured I might take this opportunity to say a little bit about this topic that we haven't talked about a lot because it's a hot topic in the industry, right? The quality of RVs, and people get really upset when they get an RV that's not high quality. And we understand that. I mean, you pay money for this dream and then, you know, your dreams die if there's a lot of problems with it. But also, I see that this is a much more complicated issue, and I actually don't place all the responsibility on the manufacturers. I actually think it's a two-sided monster where both the consumer and the manufacturer have colluded to
match made in hell.
Yeah, it really is. So as RVing became more and more popular, the market was demanding lower and lower prices. I mean, people will buy a trailer that is less money regardless of any quality issues whatsoever out there. They talk with their money.
I am shocked at the number, the percentage of people that will buy something visibly cheaper and visibly junkier to save $1,000 to $2,000.
Yeah, but the industry knows that. They've learned that very clearly, that price is such an issue. And then anytime we see a company put out a higher quality rig that does have a price point that's actually remarkably higher than a lot of other things in that area, people start freaking out. And they're like, this is so expensive. And they start complaining about the prices. So you really see that this is a price sensitive industry. And we see people on the RV industry side trying to squeeze every nickel out of the construction, from where the electrical plugs go to, you know, it's amazing, LED lights and how many there are.
But they don't look, RV companies don't want to be getting bombarded with complaints.
Right.
They're not happy about
so
this.
So I think
either.
I do think we've reached rock bottom on this. I think the industry was turning out RVs so quickly because people were buying them. I think RV dealers were putting such pressure on manufacturers because RV dealers were putting in all these orders and they weren't getting filled fast enough. So RV dealers were like screaming at the manufacturers. Manufacturers were ramping up their production lines beyond what they could control quality-wise. And people were, you know, snapping them up at all of the dealerships. I think we reached a bottom with that, and I truly believe that manufacturers, many of them have said, hold on,
and the fast,
this is crazy.
The absolute furious pace of sales over the last 6 years, whatever it is slowing down a little, just becoming normal. And I think that a lot of the manufacturers are going to take this opportunity to pull it together. And for those for those of you out there that did spit your coffee out, think about the American car companies. You know, when I was a kid, American cars were junky. I'm sorry. Like in the 80s, American cars were generally speaking junky. And now, I have a new F-250.
Found on road dead, roadside dead.
Oh, there was one for every company. I mean, the idea of like having to bring a new American car in for like warranty work is like bizarre. Like you just don't have to bring them back in. They just run. They just go. And so if the auto industry can do it, I think the RV industry can do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually have hope for that. We know from speaking with a lot of people in the manufacturing, on the manufacturing side of this, we know that they are actually taking real world measures. And we also know that a lot of them, people don't understand, a lot of them actually feel really bad about this. Like, they're on the manufacturing side saying, we don't want to turn out bad trailers. Like, we want everybody to be happy with their RVs, but like, we've got to get this under control. So I'm hopeful, just like you're hopeful about the trucks. I'm hopeful about the quality.
All right. This is my big reach. This is my moonshot. And this really follows up on your two. So your first one is back to basics with RVs, both smaller and simpler, and then a higher focus on quality. That inspires me to think that a trend might emerge where fiberglass trailers go mainstream, because fiberglass trailers, in a sense, are smaller and simpler. Fiberglass trailers, in a very real sense, are better quality than a lot of stick and tin trailers. They also are more expensive, but I think they occupy a very interesting price point because there are so many kind of cheaper $18,000 to $20,000 to $22,000 travel trailers, and then you go up to an Airstream. Right? There's lots of stuff in the $20,000 price point for travel trailers, and then there's not a lot in the $40,000 to $50,000 price point for
the
travel
Lance
trailers.
The Lance price point. It's like Lance World there.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think that fiberglass could mm-hmm. move into that territory and say, hey, look, you want something better than the typical stick and tin trailer, but you don't have enough money for an Airstream mm-hmm. or you don't want an Airstream. Well, here's an option that's $42,000.
I think it might be a little bit of a pipe dream. I think it's a good dream.
I don't think it is, because Airstream bought Nest.
Right.
And just by the fact that Airstream is producing the Nest, then they've already become the number one fiberglass retailer.
Yeah.
And if Airstream buys Nest, you know, and Airstream's owned by Thor, of course, you know, you can't tell me that Thor and Forest River aren't looking at some of these other small family-run fiberglass
right.
companies and saying, we can buy these and we can produce so many more of them. These small fiberglass companies, they are owned by mom and dad. And trust me, Stephanie and I know, because we yeah. wrote an article for Trailer Life about it. I mean, when you call a fiberglass company for information, like, the son is answering the phone, or the dad is answering
the phone. And his dad's fly fishing. And I'll get back to you next week, maybe.
Like, it is hard for them to invest in like a $700,000 mold, right? I mean, yeah. aren't the molds that crazy
the molds
expensive?
Are extremely expensive. Well, guess, in fact, yeah.
Guess who could invest in those types of molds?
Right.
You know,
the
Thor,
molds would be
river.
One of the reasons why some of these bigger companies would purchase the smaller one, because they could get the mold along with the purchase.
Thor
yeah.
or Forest River buys some of these fiberglass companies, they can get those fiberglass trailers on dealer lots all over the country, where these current mom and pop operations, most of the time you're buying the fiberglass camper directly from them.
I totally see where you're going with this. And I do think that if I saw one other major manufacturer, like Winnebago, Thor, or Forest River, and I know that Thor owns Airstream, but another, you know, division of Thor, bring it in. If I saw that happen again, I might think we
you
have
call
a trend.
It a trend.
Yeah. So we'll see, because Airstream, I don't think that anything that Airstream does necessarily sets the pace. Well, for the rest of the industry.
I mean, here's what's interesting, too. I mean, the RV sales have cooled off a little. And, you know, that might keep these two to three large behemoths
from snapping
in terms of Thor,
up
Forest
things,
River,
yeah.
or Winnebago, from snapping up all these other companies. Mm-hmm. But if things started to rev up again or just stabilize over a long period of time, oh, man, I think these little mom-and-pop fiberglass companies are ripe to be bought. And then these larger RV companies will get those fiberglass campers on lots all over the country at that middle price point.
I think you're going to have to introduce dry bathrooms into fiberglass travel trailers like Bigfoot in order to get a bigger share of the marketplace.
That's what I'm saying. Oliver, Bigfoot, these fiberglass companies, they do have nice 24-foot
I know Bigfoot. Yeah, I didn't know Oliver had that big of one. Okay, yeah.
And some of those fiberglass companies, they do want to try to have molds for like a 28-foot trailer. So I'm not saying this year, but I'm saying
right.
maybe in 5 years when you go to an RV dealership, there'll be fiberglass option.
You're
on
doing
the lot.
Long-term trends. Okay, I like
my,
it.
And I'm sipping from my juice box.
I heard the sound of it before on the recording. Can you not? so ridiculous. All right. So let's move on to the camping industry. All right. So my first trend that I see, and I'm not saying that this is incredibly exciting, but I really do believe in this, is I believe in the continued rise and refinement of the resort camping experience at campgrounds. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that many of you have probably heard me over the past couple of years with a little bit of complaining about the fact, first of all, I remember years ago we were complaining just that some campgrounds use the word resort.
And there was been to resort.
No resort to be
resort
found.
Campgrounds. There's like not a pool.
Right.
Okay. Like, okay, you don't have a pool.
And when we first started camping, I think that that was actually more common. More common would the word resort be used in an inappropriate way. Now you truly do have a lot of resort options, of fantastic resort options that have emerged in the past 5 years. Now, my other complaint that started to happen over the course of the last couple of years was that these resort campgrounds that were offering nice resort amenities, they were playing a game where they were trying to charge resort prices without really offering resort hospitality.
Stephanie is so opposed to that kind of thing. Like, you don't mind paying a top dollar price for a top dollar experience. Like, Stephanie will never complain about paying $160 a night at Fort Wilderness. She never will.
No, because they're providing a resort experience.
But you'll complain about spending $90 a night somewhere that's just not cutting it.
Yeah, I mean, because $90 a night is a perfectly reasonable price for that site on Quarryvale. That Jellystone Quarryvale campground, that's a resort. And you're paying $90, $100 for that. That was a huge, beautiful site, landscaping around it. Those rocks were gorgeous.
And then
you could get a hot tub
for,
delivered to your site there.
Right, for an extra charge. And then, then there's dozens and dozens of free activities included in the price tag.
Right. So, and there's things like that. Now, if I'm going to pay $350 a night for a cabin, I'm okay with that. If it has sheets on the bed, you know, but you like some of these,
if there's filters for the coffee machine,
yeah, some of these campgrounds were playing a little footloose, like, oh, I'm gonna get
price. We've stayed in some high-end cabins and it's like there's the coffee pot but there ain't no filters,
right? And then we stayed in all those cabins and the chain, the Highway West chain, they were truly operating at a resort level.
And you put your finger on that right away, because Highway West, okay, there was the hotel industry background, I think a little bit more so with them.
Yeah. So what I've seen is, I would say over the past year to year and a half, more and more places, and we're always looking at this, more and more places are making sure that those beautiful hospitality experiences that you have when you step into a fancy hotel and there's a bar there, right? Maybe a craft beer selection.
At most Marriott's, you know.
No, right. You get a cookie, right? I was just at a Double Tree, and I checked in and I got the cookie. Like, just give people a cookie at the campground,
and
right?
Guess what? Stephanie filled out their stinking 20-minute
review, you know what?
Because she got a cookie.
Not because I got a cookie, but because truly everybody there was very nice.
Imagine if you had good service. Imagine if you got a cookie and
I got so annoyed by how long that survey was. I was like, okay, I'm trying to be nice and fill out the survey, but it's going on and on and on. But it was a great experience and they deserved a good review for it.
And it's just standard. It's just like when you pay X amount of dollars to stay at an RV resort, it shouldn't be a crapshoot whether you get the resort experience. It should be a real quality controlled experience.
You should have food options on the campground, because nobody that cooks meals for their kids every night, most people who cook meals for their kids every night don't want to go on vacation and cook for their kids every night. You want that nice restaurant experience. You want
to
get pizza at the pool. You want to get ice cream after dinner. So I'm seeing that they're nailing it at a lot of places, and I think that they're making money off it, and we're going to see more and more of these, not less, even though a lot of people say it's not camping. It doesn't matter. You know what it is? Good business.
I'm like speechless. She just
I dropped the mic.
You just put such a fine point on that. I like had nothing
you
to say.
You
after 200 something episodes, I was just literally speechless.
It's good business.
So my first trend is I do think it is actually connected to yours. So as more and more of these resort campgrounds open, and as more and more campgrounds are adding lots and lots of cabins and alternate accommodations, or even sometimes there's like small little hotel type accommodations, I think in the Northeast and in colder climates, you're going to see campgrounds going, well, we have 50 cabins here. Why don't we stay open this winter?
Mm-hmm.
And like that Philadelphia South KOA that we went to, they have a bunch of nice cabins. They're adding a lot more cabins and they're open. Okay, they're open year round.
Yeah.
And that's a corporate owned KOA, and those people have their finger on the pulse of things.
Right.
So I've been saying this for years. I think more campgrounds will find it financially profitable to stay open year round. Maybe not the whole campground, maybe a small selection of RV sites closer to the heated bathhouses or whatever it might be, but also because of the fact that they have cabins, and those cabins, it is going to be easier to have running water to them all winter and easier to heat them, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that we've seen that increase, and I do agree that it's going to keep increasing. Now, my last trend in the camping space is I believe that we are going to see continued investment in alternate accommodations on campgrounds.
Which ties into what I'm saying about staying open all winter.
Right. And also community spaces. So oftentimes these alternate accommodations like glamping tents and cabins and tree houses and all of these kinds of things, right? Very Instagram worthy. Okay. These kinds of places, cabooses, things like that. They're also oftentimes developed along with these really beautiful community spaces where people can have group campfires.
And
that's what people are craving. That's what people want.
Areas.
People want to get together with people and enjoy the great outdoors and, reconnect.
Well, campers are, for the most part, social people. And campers that go to private campgrounds more than the state park campground are really social people because they are often closer together.
Closer to neighbors, yeah.
Some state park campers don't want to be as social and they want that big private site. But, if you're camping at a private RV park, chances are you like being around people. And if there's a community fire pit, you're going to go hang out there and chat with other RV owners.
I'll add, though, Jeremy, that I think that this trend is perfectly applicable to the state park system as well right now. I see state parks really investing in their campgrounds in some of these areas. I'm seeing a lot of states have, those community fire pits, those upgraded amenities around the campground, whereas some people who are doing even reviews for us on Campground of the Week are saying, some of these campgrounds that are being built in Missouri, or you can't tell the difference between that and a beautiful private park.
And that's a reason to not like where we live in New Jersey.
Yeah, we don't have that luck.
Because in the Midwest, it seems like a lot of the state park
Arkansas is doing it.
And in the South, a lot of the state park systems are trendy and on point with this stuff. Where here in the Northeast, we have this old kind of crumbling state park system.
Yeah, it's not, nobody cares about it either up here. But
why is that?
It's
why
bizarre.
Is it? I mean, why is it that Georgia or Arkansas,
Florida
has a dynamic
invests in their state parks,
park campground system, and a state like New Jersey or Connecticut,
it's part of the tourism industry or not. And in New Jersey, we just have such a strong tourism industry that's centered around the shore and some other areas, the up north, the skiing. It's just, and the city. It's just not a state park.
Some other states would be in the Midwest are saying, "Hey, come visit."
Yeah,
us.
That's their tourism dollars.
Park.
Yeah, they're looking.
There will
that.
Never be a commercial for New Jersey tourism that's "Come visit our state
parks,
campgrounds."
Yeah.
Not
ever going to happen. All right, what's your last one?
Well, I know I was kind of a prophet with my other ones, and I was really looking into my crystal ball and thinking about the future. It's the sound of the sucking on a juice box. It's similar.
All right.
This one's already happening, right? I mean, this isn't something that's amazing that I'm pointing out. There's statistics about it. So in the past, if someone wanted to go into the campground business, whether a family wanted to buy a campground or KOA wanted to add a campground or whatever, the model used to be that you'd find an old rundown campground, buy a pre-existing campground and fix it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was for the first 6, 7, 8 years that we got into RVing and for many, many years before that. People were not building new campgrounds, partly because of real estate prices in a lot of places and partly because a lot of the campgrounds that were built post-World War II had become a little old and run down. And there was just a lot of inventory in terms of older people who were willing to sell their campgrounds to a new generation of owner. But now what's happening, and you see it happening a lot in the KOA world, you see it happening a lot in the Jellystone world, is campgrounds are being built from scratch again, which is really exciting because what's happening is entrepreneurs are seeing that campgrounds are profitable enough that they can buy a piece of land that is totally undeveloped, put in that multi-million dollar investment, and it is a good and reasonable investment. And a lot of hotel industry type businesses, like Blue Water in our area that owns Massey's Landing, are moving into the campground game and building campgrounds from scratch. This is very exciting to me because, as many of you know, reservations are harder to get. Campgrounds are more busy and more booked than ever. And we need more campgrounds. I mean, as an RV owner, I desperately want more campgrounds in my state, in my region. I want more options. And the market is...
Well, the market's working.
The market is working for that.
The market's working here. And I would also say, I was saying this at the RV show, a couple people were asking about this reservation thing, right? Some of the new people out there were saying, hey, we hear it's hard to get reservations. What's the deal with this? And I said to them, you know, okay, this is true. People are getting crazy about making reservations. It's been tough in the state park system for a while, but we're coming around now to the best private campgrounds. People are making their reservations a year in advance. In other words, when they're there that year, they're making their reservation
whenever
for the next year.
Campground opens up reservations for the next year, people are booking.
People are making them. But I said to them, I said, hey, just a quick tip about that. Since everybody's making their reservations really far in advance, guess what everybody's also doing? Canceling reservations all the time.
Because they just don't actually know.
Nobody knows.
I mean, look, I book Disney World. I book Fort Wilderness so far in advance. Like, I honestly have no idea if we're actually going to go.
Yeah, and then you look at the canceling. And I just gave them that tip. I was like, look, we've gotten really lucky because we know that now. So we'll go to a place last minute because we call and then we stalk them for cancellations.
In a weird way, like you're being forced to book earlier than you can actually know if you can
go
somewhere.
For
a lot of
people's
work schedules and everything.
Yeah, but a lot of the time I think there's more cancellations now than ever before because of this. People are just like, I'm going to make a reservation now and figure out whether I can take it later on. So, but I do think that all of this craziness does indicate a need for more campsites. And obviously I think the real estate companies are really diving into that. The hospitality companies are diving into it. It's a money making.
They're making good campgrounds.
Yeah.
I mean, in our region, like not New Jersey, but in our broad region, like the Mid-Atlantic region, you know, like that company Blue Water, they opened Massey's. They built Massey's Landing from scratch. Now they're building a couple other campgrounds from scratch and buying old ones and fixing it up. So within 6 hours of our house, we do have some really awesome new campground options. I just want them closer to home.
Yeah, you don't want to have to go very far. You want 2 hours. Everything within 2 hours. Oh, come on. There's nothing left in that little mini juice box. Our poor listeners. I don't think I'm gonna do any sound editing.
So I
want to
hear from our listeners.
All right.
And I just like, I mean, do you think we're right? Do you think we're wrong? I mean, just curious what your opinions are, because a lot of you are very knowledgeable about the RV industry and the camping industry. And what trends do you think are emerging in both of those spaces? Maybe we can chat about it in RVFTA, the group. Or you could just drop us an email.
And if you want to see some of the best trends in resort camping experiences and having fun at the campground with your family, don't forget to check out jellystonepark.com to find one of those amazing Jellystone parks near you. We are certainly lining up our Jellystone Park stays for next year.
We need to book a fall Jellystone weekend. We need to do it now.
I know. We got to figure it out.
And I want to go back to Jellystone Lorraine.
I know. We know that. It's all been registered.
Beautiful.
I think our listeners are well aware. I think you've now mentioned that on many episodes. Maybe someone out there will just book it for us. And like, just please stop talking about it, Jeremy. Here's your reservation.
If I don't get 2 Jellystone trips in a year,
we always do.
I'm sad.
At least. All right, everybody.
I miss Yogi.
We'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.